first reading comes from 1 Kings chapter 19, verses 19 to 21. So Elijah went from there and found Elisha, son of Shaphat. He was ploughing with 12 yoke of oxen, and he himself was driving the 12th pair. Elijah went up to him and threw his cloak around him. Elisha then left his oxen and ran after Elijah. "Let me kiss my father and mother goodbye," he said, "then I will come with you." "Go back," Elijah replied. "What have I done to you?" So Elisha left him, went back. He took his yoke of oxen and slaughtered them. He burned his ploughing equipment to cook the meat and gave it to the people, and they ate. Then he set out to follow Elijah and became his servant. And the second part of our reading is in 2 Kings chapter 2, verses 1 to 18. When the Lord was about to take Elijah up to heaven in a whirlwind, Elijah and Elisha were on their way from Gilgal. Elijah said to Elisha, "Stay here, the Lord has sent me to Bethel." But Elisha said, "As surely as the Lord lives and you live, I will not leave you." So they went down to Bethel. The company of the prophets of Bethel came out to Elisha and asked, "Do you know that the Lord is going to take your master from you today?" "Yes, I know," Elisha replied, "so be quiet." Then Elijah said to him, "Stay there, Elisha. The Lord has sent me to Jericho." And he replied, "As surely as the Lord lives and you live, I will not leave you." So they went to Jericho. The company of the prophets at Jericho went up to Elisha and asked him, "Do you know that the Lord is going to take your master from you today?" "Yes, I know," he replied, "so be quiet." Then Elijah said to him, "Stay here, the Lord has sent me to the Jordan." And he replied, "As surely as the Lord lives and you live, I will not leave you." So the two of them walked on. 50 men from the company of prophets went and stood at a distance facing the place where Elijah and Elisha stopped at the Jordan. Elijah took his cloak, rolled it up and struck the water with it. The water divided to the right and to the left, and the two of them crossed over on dry ground. When they had crossed, Elijah said to Elisha, "Tell me, what can I do for you before I am taken from you?" "Let me inherit a double portion of your spirit," Elisha replied. "You've asked a difficult thing," Elijah said. "Yet if you see me when I am taken from you, it will be yours, otherwise it will not." As they were walking along and talking together, suddenly a chariot of fire and horses of fire appeared and separated the two of them. And Elijah went up to heaven in a whirlwind. Elisha saw this and cried out, "My father, my father, the chariots and horsemen of Israel." And Elisha saw him no more. Then he took hold of his garment and tore it in two. Elisha then picked up Elijah's cloak that had fallen from him and went back and stood on the bank of the Jordan. He took the cloak that had fallen from Elijah and struck the water with it. "Where now is the Lord, the God of Elijah?" he asked. And when he struck the water, it divided to the right and to the left, and he crossed over. The company of the prophets from Jericho who were watching said, "The spirit of Elijah is resting on Elisha." And they went to meet him and bowed to the ground before him. "Look," they said, "we, your servants, have 50 able men. Let them go and look for your master. Perhaps the spirit of the Lord has picked him up and set him down on some mountain or in some valley." "No," Elisha replied, "do not send them." But they persisted until he was too embarrassed to refuse. So he said, "Send them." And they sent 50 men who searched for 3 days but did not find him. Then they returned to Elisha, who was staying in Jericho. And he said to them, "Didn't I tell you not to go?" In any form of leadership, an important aspect is succession planning. What or whom comes next? Who is the next leader or leaders off the rank? From big companies to sporting teams, that's a key question. It's especially important for those who wish to maintain a level of success, whatever success may look like. Apple transitioned from Steve Jobs to Tim Cook and will move on again to John Ternus in September. Manchester City Football Club have just appointed the successor to the successful Pep Guardiola in Enzo Maresca. The Church of England took a long time to discern that Sarah Mullally would succeed Justin Welby as Archbishop of Canterbury. A swifter transition is looking likely for the leadership of the Labour Party and for who will be our next Prime Minister as Keir Starmer steps down. Who comes next is an important part of leadership, and succession can be aided by leaders mentoring and helping develop the next generation of leaders. And in our readings this morning from the books of the Kings, we see this kind of leadership development played out as Elijah comes to the end of his prophetic ministry. And Elisha takes up the mantle as the next prophetic leader in the kingdom of Israel. So let's see what's going on in these readings and then reflect a little bit on what they might be saying to us today. On Mount Sinai, the living God recommissions Elijah out of his depression. And one of the tasks he's given is to anoint his successor, Elisha. And in the first of our readings this morning, we have Elijah following those specific instructions and finding Elijah exactly where God said he was going to be. Now, Elisha is an apparently a prosperous individual, owning 12 yoke of oxen. And his call to prophetic ministry apparently came out of nowhere. When Elijah approached Elisha, he didn't do things as you might expect. He didn't go up to Elijah and say, "Hi, God sent me to say that you're going to be my successor, so come along and I will train you." No, that would be far too conventional approach. No, to call Elisha to be his apprentice, Elijah throws a cloak over Elisha. We might see this as being a strange approach to take. However, the cloak was also at times referred to as a mantle. And for important people such as Elijah, this symbolic action was about passing your mantle on to someone else. Elisha certainly understood what Elijah did, even if there's seemingly initial reluctance to go with Elijah. Unlike Jesus, who doesn't allow his would-be disciples to go and say goodbye to their family, Elijah allows Elisha to go and say farewell. And Elisha symbolizes his commitment to following Elijah by slaughtering his oxen and burning his yoke and plow. Elisha then sets out with Elijah to become his apprentice. Elijah then disappears from the narrative of the books of the Kings for a couple of chapters, until the story we reflected upon last week occurs. And Elisha disappears for even longer, until the transition occurs into the second book of the Kings, and the second of our readings this morning. The books of the Kings were really one book. The separation only came because all the words couldn't fit on one scroll originally. So in the second part of our reading, we come to the end of Elijah's story as God's prophet and the beginning of Elisha's story as God's prophet. Elijah knows that the end is coming and he embarks on a final tour of the central territory of Israel, Gilgal, Bethel and Jericho. And Elijah tells Elisha not to come with him on this journey. But each time he tells him, Elisha shows his commitment, not just to his calling, but personally to Elijah by saying, "As surely as the Lord lives, I will not leave you." And as he travels with Elijah, Elisha is asked by a wider group of prophets if he knows that Elijah is going to be taken from him. Despite the repetitious nature of this talk and the upsetting nature, Elisha says yes. And the tone becomes more emotional as the narrative reaches the River Jordan. In a similar way to the way that Moses uses his staff to split the waters of the Red Sea, Elijah uses his symbol of his prophetic office, his cloak, to split the waters of the River Jordan. Elijah and Elisha cross from the promised land into the wilderness. And in a deathbed scene where there is no death, we have the final moments of Elijah on earth. Asking of Elisha a question that usually a servant would ask of their master, Elijah says, "What can I do for you?" And Elisha asks for a double portion of something that is quite unquantifiable. He asks for a double portion of Elijah's power as a prophet, a double portion of his force, vitality, energy, authority, what Elisha called Elijah's spirit. A double portion is the traditional inheritance of an eldest son. And as Elijah's sole apprentice, he could be in some ways considered Elijah's surrogate son. Elijah understands what Elisha is asking for, and he says he will receive it. But it will be something difficult for Elisha to bear in his life, as it's been difficult for Elijah. I knew I'd get that wrong at some point. If Elisha remains with Elijah until he's taken up into heaven, he will receive his mantle, receive his prophetic spirit. And so Elijah and Elisha walk on together for the final time, until the sudden appearance of a chariot and horses of fire, and they come and separate Elijah from Elisha. Elijah then ascends into heaven in a whirlwind. He's not transported by the chariot and horses of fire. Their purpose is simply to separate Elijah from Elisha. There's no record of Elijah dying. He's simply taken into heaven. He ascends and so disappears from Elisha's sight. And this causes Elisha to cry out, "My father, my father." And he tears his clothes in grief. Elisha then picks up Elijah's symbol of prophetic office, his cloak. Elisha is now the man. The name Elisha means, "My God saves." And this will be his calling to proclaim this message to the northern kingdom of Israel going forward. Elisha is still on the wilderness side of the River Jordan. And with his cloak, he does as Elijah did. And he parts the river so he can cross back into the promised land. Elisha does as Elijah did to show that the spirit of Elijah, the mantle of Elijah, now rests upon him. Back in the promised land, this company of prophets are waiting and they recognize that the spirit of Elijah now rests on Elisha, and they acknowledge him as the chief prophet in Israel. However, they decide to seek for Elijah's body, even though Elisha tells them their search will be fruitless. And Elisha's words are proved to be true. And in 3 days, they find nothing. In our story, we have Elijah stepping back and Elisha stepping forward. Elisha's apprenticeship is over, and he becomes the master. There's no Anakin Skywalker, Obi-Wan Kenobi-like lightsaber battle to mark this transition, just the simple picking up of a mantle of a cloak once Elijah has ascended into heaven. The pattern of apprenticeship modelled by Elijah with Elisha was very much like the pattern modelled by Moses and Joshua. And then the pattern that we see with Jesus and his disciples. Moses mentored Joshua as his successor, and Jesus gathered a core group of 12 men to journey with him and learn with him over 3 years. We have far more detail in the Gospels of how Jesus interacted with his disciples and how they learned from him, and then in the Acts of the Apostles, how Jesus' disciples then become the leaders who take up his mantle. We don't get any insight into the training that Elisha received other than he walked alongside Elijah. And that may have been it. Elisha may simply have learnt by being present with Elijah. That was very much the model of ancient apprenticeship, learning by being with and doing as your master did. But we see this model of leadership patterned in both the Old and New Testaments. And it's a model of what comes next leadership. Because God is always concerned with what comes next. We often become so consumed by the present moment that we inhabit. And there are many things that we need to focus upon that are about what is right in front of us. But we would also be remiss about not thinking about what comes next. But we often fail to do so. In the business world, there are many examples of successful companies that have failed to adapt from the hubris of their success in the moment to see what the future had in store for them. Blockbuster, the movie and video game rental chain. At its peak, Blockbuster employed 84,000 people worldwide and had 9,000 outlets. Yet it failed to adapt to the streaming market and went bust. BlackBerry was once the dominant force in the mobile phone industry. At one point, there were 80 million BlackBerry users in the world. Yet it failed to move to touchscreens. And by 2017, had left the mobile phone market. Kodak was the leader in photographic film throughout the 20th century. Importantly, Kodak engineers also built the first digital camera prototype in 1975. Yet they feared the loss of their photographic film business, so did not develop digital technology. Kodak filed for bankruptcy in 2012. The future was before all of these companies, yet they got trapped in the success of the moment and they lost everything. And church communities can do the same. You can enter some churches and you could be 20, 30, 300 years in the past. And I don't mean through the things people do, like the songs they sing or the prayers that they use, but in the attitudes and the outlook of the people who compose the church. They're still living in the past, still living in the glory days that have gone. God is with us in this moment as his people, but he's also drawing us into the future, to what comes next, to what God is preparing for us in the future. God hadn't finished with Elijah when he said he needed to call Elisha to be his successor. There was still much of Elijah's prophetic ministry ahead of him. God didn't wait until the chariot and horses of fire were on their way to get ready for what came next. God had a rolling plan of how things were going to go, and he set them in motion early. And God still has a rolling plan of how things are going to go. God knows the future of his church, and God, through us, will be already taking steps to prepare us for that future, as well as sustaining us in the present. Do we look for what comes next in God's plans? Or are we so focused on the moment that we fail to discern what the future is that God has in store for us? God said these words through another of his prophets, Isaiah. Forget the former things, do not dwell on the past. See, I am doing a new thing. Now it springs up. Do you not perceive it? Are we too concerned about being a small church, a declining membership with a lack of growth, that we fail to see what God is going to do in the future? Or are we too busy looking at our feet to see where we're going? Elijah was at his lowest ebb when God recommissioned him and called him to take on Elisha as an apprentice. Elijah could have, quite understandably, wallowed in his depression. Elijah had had a hard ministry, but Elijah didn't. He took up God's new word for his life and he went forward. And for us as a church, there is always a new word from God to hear, to take us forward, if we are willing to hear it. This means we first need to listen. Listen in our times of gathered worship, listen in our deacons' meetings, listen in our church meetings, listen in our prayer meetings, listen in our house groups, listen in our Sunday school groups, listen in our conversations with one another. Listen to God revealing his next steps through his Spirit, through his words, through our words, through the words of the least, through the words of the youngest or the oldest among us. Listen. Then we need to try things. We need to step forward in faith. If we think we've heard something from God, we need to put those words into practice, however odd they may seem, however challenging, being bold enough to involve whoever may be part of Christ Church of whatever age, to discern the new people that God may be calling to do new things. And in trying, we must give people permission to fail or to do things poorly, to try and not get it right, but then to try again. God will lead us on a learning journey. God will be leading us on a growing journey. When we look at the life of Jesus and his disciples, we all too often see that they got things wrong, that the progress they made at times was painfully slow. Yet by the time of the day of Pentecost, however scared, however unprepared they felt, they were ready. Their apprenticeship was over. The same was true of Elisha, standing on the bank of the River Jordan. And in striking the water with the cloak, he shows that his apprenticeship is over. Our apprenticeship with Jesus is, in most respects, never over. But there is also a time when you're learning to ride a bike when you need to take the stabilizers off. What is God calling us to do that will show that we're ready to go forward into the future with him? God has a mantle ready for us to pick up, whatever it may be. But it is our choice as to whether we pick it up or not as a church family, or as individual followers of Christ, or for God's glory. The choice is ours. Let us pray. Lord God, may we listen to you as you reveal new things to us, as you lead us into the future. May we hear, then may we do.